Folks, you are tuned into High Plains Morning right here on High Plains Public Radio. This is Jenny Inzerillo, your host, and guess what? We have got an album. I get a lot of content when I'm looking through new music that's coming up, and something caught my eye. I saw a release called Working Class Heroes, A History of Struggle and Song. And as you know, I love playing really folky folk music. And this is a new release out, and Matt Callahan and Yvonne Moore, 20 songs written in the folk canon. And this is old songs, folks. These are songs that you probably have heard me play on Labor Day specialty shows. It's a collection of story songs, and it's the men and women who sometimes literally gave their lives to emancipate the working class. This is really exciting music for me, and I just love playing the old stuff, folks. So I've got Matt Callahan live on the Skype from Bern, Switzerland with me. Matt, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
This is real stuff, and I love that the genre listed was music/folk, traditional labor, and industrial relations. So you can imagine, not a lot of sick beats you can really dance to, but this is where we get to serious substance of folk music. We've got history, reflection on the human condition, and take a pause and just think about how our country, how America has proceeded through these everyday workers, their sacrifice, and where that history lands us today. And I love that now that we're entering this new chapter about labor, I just love that this music forces us to take a pause and check in and think about, well, where are we now? So I'm very fascinated to find out a little bit more about what drew you into this music. You have a huge, long history with folks that were peace workers, folks that were labor activists. So I can imagine this probably feels like familiar territory for you. There was a really great line from the press on this album that said, "The most essential music is conceived by real human beings, ordinary, anonymous, often poor people who stood up and joined together to fight injustice and institutional oppression." So this album is just a collection of those American working class pre-World War II folk songs. So they're much, you'll feel the history in them. So let's start out, tell us a little bit about you. And I want to hear about your partner, Yvonne Moore, who's a singer from Switzerland that worked with you as a duet on this album.
Well, first of all, my interest in this particular repertoire does go back, as you suggested, to my youth, because I heard some of these songs when I was a kid. My father was in the ILWU, the International Longshoremen and Warehousemen's Union. I was too when I got out of high school. I went to work on the docks and then in the warehouses and so on. So I was familiar with some of this labor lore, if you want to call it that, from my youth. But more importantly, there was a songbook published in 1967 called Hard Hitting Songs for Hard Hit People, which was assembled by Alan Lomax, Woody Guthrie, and Pete Seeger. And that had actually been put together much earlier. It had sat in a, limbo in desk drawers and various places since 1940 when it was completed. So it was only published 27 years after it had actually been assembled. And so that gives you a certain sense of the dating and the timing of these things. The songs going all the way back to 1911, 1915, and so on. But the outstanding feature of this that attracted me and Yvonne to it was the fact that upon examining some of the tunes, we realized that almost all of them had been written by workers themselves. They were not written by singer-songwriters or professional musicians or composers. There's a couple of exceptions, but almost all of them were just written by regular, everyday working people. Okay, that immediately sets off a number of contrasts, particularly for people like myself. I was born in 1951, so I grew up in the folk music revival of the 60s. I participated in all of that. And this question of authenticity and where do folk songs come from and all that stuff. And suddenly you have songs written by these people. How can they not be authentic? And this is the working class that was supposedly the ones who voted for Donald Trump. So you have a historical record in lyrics to songs that tells the exact opposite of what we have been told about the working class. So it's being contemporary is a relationship both to the music. The music itself is popular American music. And on the other hand, the texts are being written by actual working class people. There's all sorts of elements that reveal things that have been buried or obscured or in some way distorted. And in addition to that, the music itself is very exciting. It's interesting. It's fun. There's all kinds of musical aspects to it that are a pleasure and a joy to actually make. So you get a combination of these different things that makes for us a very, you know, heartfelt and joyous project.
It seems like maybe the impetus, the catalyst for doing this album might have been the project you did in 2017 that specifically worked with the hard-hitting songs for hard-hit people. Brooklyn Folk Festival was, and that was something that, you know, you worked on. Can you talk a little bit about that? Was that kind of the catalyst?
Yeah, that was the catalyst. I mean, in fact, what happened was that we had done an earlier project called Songs of Freedom, which was the republication of an Irish revolutionary named James Connolly's songbook. And we had performed that at the Brooklyn Folk Festival in 2016. And I was talking with the directors of the festival, and we discussed this whole question of commemoration and the relationship of, historical music or music that tells history with contemporary concerts and festivals. And this subject of hard-hitting songs being published in 1967, the 50th anniversary being 2017, came up. And they really were excited about the idea of doing that. And initially, we thought it was sort of a one-off. You know, we went and put together a 45-minute selection of songs from the book. But afterwards, we played several other festivals and began doing concerts with the repertoire and had to expand it to the 20 songs that are now on the CD because it had to fill 2 hours, you know, live. And the thing is that what actually ultimately drove us or inspired us to actually want to record it and make a book was the interest that audiences all over the world showed. Not only about the music, but about the people. When we were telling them about Ella Mae Wiggins or Sarah Hogan Gunning or John Hancock, they wanted to know about this, particularly people who are real aficionados, you know, of American roots music or folk music or whatever, thinking they knew it all. And who were these people that they didn't know about? And why didn't they know about them? Why aren't there in other collections, you know, all these collections that get published, you know, every so often that, you know, claim to be the definitive, legacy collection box set. Why don't they include these things? Why are these guys written out of it? It can't be because of the music, because the music is the same. You know, I Am a Man of Constant Sorrow is the same music as I Am a Girl of Constant Sorrow. How can there be a problem with the music? It's not the music that's the problem. It's the words, and it's the people, and it's the story they told, and the sacrifices they made. These people gave their lives for this. This is not just, you know, parlor games or people, you know, armchair revolutionaries. These are working people who put their lives on the line for freedom.
And that's a good, you know, you mentioned Sarah Hogan Gunning, and that was that is one of these, you know, kind of lesser known folk icons. That your partner Yvonne Moore did a project on, and you had previously done a project, you know, with James Connolly, the Irish revolutionary. So you had done these deep dives into kind of these lesser known folks, done entire books and albums about them to bring them up to the forefront. Now's a good time. Tell us a little bit about Yvonne, what drew her to Sarah Hogan Gunning, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of those other more obscure songwriters, such as Ella Mae Wiggins, Aunt Molly Jackson. I mean, these names are just incredible. You know that there are some lives lived there.
Yeah. Well, Yvonne's a great singer, in my opinion, and grew up, although she grew up in Switzerland, she grew up in love with American music, particularly blues and other blues-related forms. And we'd worked together on different music projects for years, as well as getting married and so on. But in fact, before we'd even really started this project, she had heard some recordings which I'd dug up of Sarah Hogan Gunning and was so taken by her voice and her delivery that she already wanted to do some of those songs even before we'd done this project. And so it's sort of like these, you might say, the disconnected things suddenly connected, you know, when we did the Brooklyn Folk Festival, and then they made that suggestion, and it was sort of like we'd already been poking around looking at these Sarah Hogan Gunning songs, and then we dug out some more from Aunt Molly Jackson, and then pretty soon we were already steeped in it, because that actually came from her being interested in this music. And one of the benefits of the internet and so on is that some of these things are relatively easy to access on YouTube. You know, you can hear a recording and get a sense of what it may not be the best fidelity or sound that great, but at least you can get an idea of what the melody is and learn the song. So that's how it actually began. And of course we do a lot of singing together, harmony singing, close harmony singing. We'd been doing that before this project began at all, you know, essentially kind of that close harmony singing, which is also an American tradition, you know, the two voices, whether it's the Everly Brothers, two men or brothers, or a man and a woman, or, you know, that, however the voices blend together.
And I have to say, as someone who spends a large amount of her life looking through new music, new folk, those box sets that you were speaking of that are constantly stirring up things, tribute albums of those songs by current relevant folk artists, it is shocking to say how very alive folk music is right now. There's a very rich moment. So I am very much someone who also appreciates being able to tap in and find these old, you know, crunchy recordings and playing them. It could sound like it was sung into a, you know, powder milk biscuit can in 1910, and I will play it on this show. Right. So it's very nice to know you also appreciate that. In 2019, not all things are broken. We can listen to Kansas Joe, you know. So let's go ahead and dig in a little bit to the actual music, which are labor songs. There's a really great quote by Frederick Douglass: "Power concedes nothing without demands," and that just takes you back to thinking about, you know, the American labor movement, just calling for basic dignity, wages, a fair shake, a chance to actually live. People don't really pause and realize the word labor has kind of gotten a little bit, you know, left and right of where it kind of started. Anybody who gets overtime pay, anybody who has an 8-hour work day, any kid that's 10 and doesn't have to work in a factory, these are things that we don't even think about anymore, but it's because people clawed for it really, 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 really hard with their lives, with everything. And when you think back when it happened, it's really not that long ago. So this music that we play, these labor songs, this old folk music, we've got people playing fresh, new, you know, versions of it now today. But you're dredging up the old original songs, and you're playing in them in a very raw, acoustic, sometimes totally a cappella way, so that there's no frippery. We're just listening to the lyrics, and it really does hit you harder when you feel like there's someone talking directly to you with these lyrics. Tell me a little bit about what you see as the key themes across these 20 songs, quite a collection. What made you pick these particular songs, and do you think that they all kind of work together as a package on this album?
Well, there are, in Hard-Hitting Songs for Hard-Hitting People, there are 195 songs, so we obviously narrowed it down, and we added one that was not in Hard-Hitting Songs for Hard-Hitting People, which is Joe Hill. That was also the only song that was written by, let's say, professional, or, you know, composers. Earl Robinson and Alfred Hayes wrote that song, and it was performed by Paul Robeson. And once again, Yvonne chose it because she heard Paul Robeson's incredible voice singing this really touching song, and wanted to add it as kind of a expansion on the song that we had chosen by Joe Hill, which was The Preacher and the Slave. And I think that the selection was partly a question of range, you know, trying to cover a range of different struggles, different industries, different people, also having some musical diversity, that it wasn't all the same, that there was a variety of musics represented, although it could have been broader. As I said in the introduction to the book, I don't know if it's on the CD or not, we could have chosen a different sampling. We decided, in other words, there were all kinds of labor struggles going on in the 20s and 30s with involving workers, agricultural workers in California, sharecroppers in the South, and so on and so forth, the auto workers in Detroit. There was a range of different groupings who, because of their ethnic background, brought different musical styles or different, you know, particular struggles into play. But we stuck more or less with the repertoire that was in hard-hitting songs, and that was just because we were commemorating that particular book. But it could have been, as I said, it was not because those were the only songs of that kind. Quite the contrary. Anyway, so we went in and picked things out and found the ones that seemed to be the most interesting, also in connection to the people who made them. So Sarah Ogan Gunning's story is as interesting as her song "I Hate the Capitalist System," you know, and that is such a brave and powerful statement to make. Okay, it's not just the words, it's the story she tells, why she hates the capitalist system. And that is personal, that's her actual story, but it's also the story of the whole working class. Everybody had suffered those indignities. She lost two children starved. So this is why she hated the capitalist system. This is something everybody can relate to. The same thing with Ella May, you know, this is a woman who was a fighter from the time she was, you know, first employed in the textile industry in North Carolina. And she was, you know, obviously a leader, clearly wrote, you know, very poignant lyrics that were inspiring to her fellow workers, because after she was murdered, her fellow workers testified to the fact that they were out to get her because of her songs. And in addition, there was something special about Ella May, and that was that in an era of Jim Crow and heavy racial segregation, she tried to organize black and white workers in the same union. She lived in a black community.
What year was that?
Well, she was murdered in 1929. So you can imagine this is like 24, 25, 26, 27 in this period. She was only 29 years old. She was born in 1900. And her death was caused by a vigilante mob that were out to attack a strike meeting that she was attending. But they were apparently out to get her. She was the one who was killed amongst several other workers. So, but in any case, her example and her, you know, willingness to fight, I mean, the kind of terror that was unleashed upon these people is hard to imagine. I mean, it wasn't just thugs and you know, police beating people up on picket lines. It was poisoning the wells that they drank their water from. It was raping their children. This was outright terrorism. And this stuff was done by the state. It was not just, you know, like some vigilante mob. It was the government that was doing this. So people have to follow those stories, and then you understand why we chose the songs. And of course, then there are songs by, you know, people with a, you might say, a little bit happier ending. John Hancock's actually lived to be 82 or something like that, died in San Diego maybe he was 92, I can't remember exactly. So he went on to live and continue writing songs, even though the songs that we chose from him, No More Mourning and There Are Mean Things Happening in This Land, were actually written in 1935 in the middle of a huge strike of the Southern Tenant Farmers Union. which was at that time was the biggest sharecroppers union in the country. It was the most successful in the sense of organizing black and white workers together. They actually had one massive strike in 1935 before the landowners really cracked down and drove people like Hancock's out, you know, the threat of lynching. These were serious threats, and he ended up moving out to San Diego, where he actually went on to live to a ripe old age, still writing songs. He wrote, we found this out later, but he actually wrote a song protesting Ronald Reagan. So, you know, I mean, he was still going strong when he was like in his 80s. But all these stories connect to the songs, and so it's partly choosing a song that seemed to be really important and then connecting it to the person where you could find out how, in other words, authenticity is a word. It doesn't, in a lot of ways, it means nothing. But if it means anything, then it's the connection between real people who actually did these things and what they said, so that there is a connection between words and deeds, life experience and commitment and what they expressed. So that it enriches the songs. You know, it's not simply the creativity of the artist, but it's actually the lived experience of the person. And this we think is the important link, which is not to downplay anyone else who happens to be a musician. I'm a musician, but or a composer or whatever. This is a special part of this project that people need to understand, that workers themselves wrote these songs.